by Alexander Rieder, who will speak about open source art. Please welcome him.
Thank you, thank you. Can everyone hear me? Great. So we're going to be talking about what's down here, and a bit difficult to see, but it's a display that I made that the customs official took quite an interest in as I came through on the way to Australia. I actually live in Tokyo and work for a company called Via Linux Systems Japan, although what I'll be talking about today is what I do in my free time. So everything starts with a story, and so this is my bike, and this is why I started this project. So I like to bike, and I like to bike to work, and as such, coming to Australia, I'm kind of, you know, this is the bike I rented here. If you like Centennial, if you like Centennial Park or biking around here, they have road bikes or mountain bikes or anything you need to ride on. It's right by the park to rent. So this is where I live and work. This is a map of Tokyo. This is the bay, and up here is Shinjuku, where Lost in Translation was filmed. Down here is where I work, which is a little bit south of the fish markets. It's actually on reclaimed land. Anyway, it's about 12 kilometers from those two points. And I bike it almost every day. And the reason why I do is because I can bike it in about 35 minutes. But if I don't want to bike, that means I have to take the train. And taking the train takes a loop down south around here, which means riding one of the deepest, slowest, most crowded trains. And it's not fun. So I like to ride as often as possible. And as such, I'm really curious about whether or not it's going to rain. Because if it's going to rain, I don't want to ride my bike. I want to know on the way home, should I leave at 3 and avoid the rain? Should I leave a little bit later and as it passes through? So I'm really curious about it. And I'm curious about the rain, not in terms of percentages, but in terms of whether or not it's going to cross this path right here. Because Tokyo, when you look at weather forecasts, this is the southern border along the river for the Tokyo greater district. And above this north river here is where, I mean, all that to the west is Tokyo. And it goes back into the mountains. So if you get, oh, it's a 30% chance of raining or 40% chance of rain, what does that mean to me? Is it going to cross my path or not? So that's why I started this project and making the display and what we're going to be talking about. So I'll talk about why I made the display the way I did, and then getting Linux running on it and getting some data and actually doing something with it to judge whether or not I can ride my bike to work. So we'll talk a bit about, so why did I build the display the way I did? Well, let's go back to the roots. This is the electronic delay storage automatic calculator. It's one of the first working computers built at the University of Cambridge. When I think of this, I think of vacuum tubes. I think of glass, of metal, of wires, of the raw parts, what are the raw essentials which were used to actually make the computer that is in it. You know, it's not branded, it's just the raw, it's a tool which is made and it's presented as it is, as opposed to what reminds me of bricks, but this is, again, a tool, a bit more modern. It's a random Dell, but it's fine, it serves its purpose. You can put it on a desk, you know, you use it, it's fine, it takes up space, whatever. But people like to case mods. You know, case mods is a fairly modifying your case and turning it into something else is a popular thing. A lot of people are doing it. There are lots of artistic projects out there, and there's lots of really cool stuff. This is an example of one. This is someone who took a white regular case and turned it into a hot rod. When I look at this machine, I think they want this machine to look like it's fast. They're going to put it somewhere you can see it. They want to draw your attention to it. And, you know, it's beautiful. It's branded for whoever made it. You know, it's personified. It's a computer which has been personified. And it really is in your face. As opposed to this computer, which you're really trying to hide. You know, you can take this microwave, you can put it somewhere and get it out of the way. This is also a great case mod. There's a lot of energy went into it. It looks great. But it's the exact opposite of the previous modification, right? You're trying to hide the computer. You're not trying to personify it in the sense that this is my computer, this is fast. I don't want people to be looking at it. I just want to put it away and put it and make it quiet. So there's very different approaches to case modding. And so this is kind of the approach I wanted to take is, what is a computer? You know, where does it come from? And what should it look like? So in thinking about how electronics and the industrial robotics, that sort of feel should be brought into your general life, this is DesignTide last year was an event in Tokyo. And there's designers of all different kinds. This is some interior design art which was displayed there. And so that at the end of it, you see those are just LEDs and ribbon cable running up to them providing power. But this is an example of not a computer. It doesn't do anything functionally besides what it is physically. But it's trying to bring electronics, bring something digital, bring the digital essence into everyday life in a way which you're aesthetically happy with it, which you want it to be around you. So really reconsidering how you should take what we're working with in terms of computers and then bring out its essence. So this is a bit of jewelry. They're made by a group called Tanevolt. So the mic just cut out, so this is not, sorry if you can't hear me. There's a team of two, one man based in Tokyo and another in Argentina. And what they do is take jewelry and, kind of hard to see. I wonder if we can change the brightness on this. So this group of two, Tanevolt, they take PCB boards and these chips and they sort of modify them and try to make them into something, again, which, this is a necklace. You could wear this around your neck. This is a ring, kind of difficult to see, but bringing the chip in here. There you go, some light. So you want to make something that you want to wear, to something that you want to bring into your life. You know, what is that? What is the essence that you're looking for in the raw materials? Not that you necessarily want to wear this, but really thinking about what is digital, what is electronic? How are we going to bring this into our lives in a way which we're happy which we're happy with it and we enjoy it? So when I was looking at this laptop, which is in a fairly different state earlier, I really wanted to bring out not modified into something which is saying, I am the computer, I am fast, and not something, not to hide it. I wanted to make something which you could really put anywhere in the room, integrated in with the surrounding architecture, and just enjoy it. But really, what is this computer? Not what I see in it, but what is it? Where did it come from? And that is why I ripped everything out and just left the display and the system board. And that's it. You know, when I look at this, it's just you can enjoy it visually. You can place it in the room and let it sit there. You can learn from it by examining it. So this is an old Panasonic I used to enjoy using until the ID controller died. And so I made it my subject for this project and removed everything, the disk, the PCMCIA, the plastic. It has a 1 gigahertz Pentium M processor and 512 megs of RAM, so it's a decent machine. But it's, you know, part of the other part of this project was also trying to use a piece of hardware which was buffed. You know, you can't use this anymore. In Tokyo, if you go to Akihabara, the electronics district, you can find machines like this which are half broken for $20, $30, $40 and buy them and make them into something, which is what I really want to do. So I made one, so make three, make five, and turn it into a display and put it in your house for fun. So it only needs two wires, network and power. And those are the parts which are left over after I was done with it. And as you can see, it's down here, this is it. You just kind of sit around, really trying to just make something which is unique, but beautiful to blend in around it in its surroundings. So how did we act, how does this machine work? How does it boot? So I call it Acrylic Digital. I use Debian on the server and on the client side, and I choose Debian. You could use anything, but just because I'm familiar with it, I've used it for many years. So we'll use Network Boot in order to get it up and running. And all you need to do is install a DHCP server and set up a DHCP for it. So at cetera.dhcp.conf, your host name, the MAC address for the machine, the fixed address. So in this case, this machine's running off 10.0.0.2. And an image, we're going to give it a Pixie Linux image. Pixie Linux is part of the SysLinux project. And we'll use it because when you transfer the Linux kernel, we'll need to be able to transfer the entire Linux kernel. And the TFTP client built into the network card can't necessarily do this. So we'll provide it another TFTP client to actually go and get the kernel. Oh, it should be on. I'll try to speak a little bit louder. Is that better? Great. So after we set up DHCP, we'll need FTP. So we'll just get a TFTP daemon running. And I use HPA TFTP. The DHCP server is ISC server. And once you install it, you configure it in varlib tftp boot, pixielinux.config, and then it's the IP address for the machine in hex. And in that file, you'll place the settings for the machine to boot. So you'll give it a kernel, and then you'll specify that it needs to be dev NFS, so it needs to be using NFS for root. Where that root server is going to be located, and to use DHCP for network. Another reason we're using Pixie Linux is because it allows us to specify bootline parameters, which we really need in order to get the machine up and running with root over NFS. So next, we need a kernel to actually boot on the machine, and we need to configure into it exactly the stuff we're going to need to allow it to boot. So we'll need root NFS, we'll need NFS support, we'll need the driver for the network card built in, we'll need frame buffer support so we can actually use it once it's booted. And then we'll set up NFS on the server, so and then add an entry into etc exports. So /B0FS will be exported to the client, which is 10.0.0.2. So now we have a machine which can get an IP address. It can get a kernel via TFTP. It can mount NFS, but we need to actually have a file system for it. So for that, we use debbootstrap, which is a great program in Debian to create a tru-root, which you can use for testing and debugging. The only problem with debbootstrap is that it doesn't provide a completely bootable system. So Simon Horman made a script called end debbootstrap, and we'll just use that. And it basically goes in and creates files that you'll need, which debbootstrap doesn't like, etc. init, tab, and a password file. There are a few things which need to be configured, like etc. fs tab. But you can do that once you install it, just by running debbootstrap, and then where you want it to create the file system. And in this case, we'll build Sarge. So now we have a working display. It can boot. It has a kernel. We can do something with it. Let's get some data. We'll use tinky.jp, which is one of the major weather sites in Japan. It's closest to the Bureau of Meteorology. And we'll get our data from it. The only problem is that it doesn't provide RSS feeds or provide an API to get the data. So we'll just do a bit of research into how the images are stored on the server side. And this is the source, HTML source, and an example of a GIF file that we'll want to look at how it's actually stored. The first three sections of numbers is just the category of the image type, and then the last is the timestamp. The timestamp will vary between images which are radar. Radar are stored in JST, or Japan time, and UTC, which all satellite imagery is stored in UTC. So all we need to do is generate a URL to go and get that file. And so we'll just use Perl and wget, just a simple script to generate the URL, go and get the file. Once we've got the file, we'll store it, and we'll store a 24-hour cache so we can use this data later to display it on the screen. And to actually get the data, we'll just run it out of cron, just a simple job every 10 minutes, half an hour, hour, whatever, to go and get it. No worries. So we have our ingredients. We have a working display. We can boot. We have our data. We have a 24-hour cache of data to work with. So what are we going to do with it? Let's write a bit of display code. So I wrote a program called eWeather.c, and it uses Enlightenment. I chose Enlightenment because Enlightenment is lightweight, fast, C, easy to work with, no problem to code for. We use the frame buffer, so we don't have to worry about configuring X. It's a VESA compliant video card, which most laptops are. You'll have no worries about using the frame buffer as long as it's compiled into the kernel. And we'll use VVE tool to turn the screen on and off, so we can play with the video BIOS a bit, and then when we want to turn the screen off when it's not being used, we can do so. And it's great if you're on an airplane and you need to turn your screen off. You can just run a command and turn your screen off while you're not using it so you don't consume power. So we're going to get a bunch of different image types. And this is one. This is a radar image of Japan. You can see the rain as it's pushing through. It's updated every 10 minutes, as is this image, which is of Tokyo. You might remember the image earlier, Tokyo Bay there. We're concerned about how weather patterns are going to move across this area. Now, this entire section is the greater Tokyo area, so it goes 40, 50 kilometers out to the west. So it's quite large. And weather patterns, the rain is also really going to form over the mountains, but not so much in the city as it pushes through. So when you get a percentage forecast, you're really looking at this whole area, but we're only concerned with part of it. This is satellite imagery. It's infrared of the northern hemisphere. It's updated every half an hour. As is this, which is vapor imagery, the moisture in the atmosphere. This is also updated every half an hour. And pressure charts as the weather moves through, so we can get an idea of where the fronts are moving and how quickly. And finally, the northern and southern hemispheres. So this is updated every hour. We have a 1024 by 768 display, and we're going to put four images on it, like this. And we'll get something which looks like this. So let's take a look at of the actual data. I'll show you on this screen instead of the smaller one. So the two images on the left are the most recent, Tokyo and all of Japan, the radar images. And on the right is the weather as it moves through. This is 6 hours worth of data. You can tell by the time stamps. And you can see as the front is moving forward, okay, so now it looks like it's probably about an hour and a half away, and it's 3 p.m. Maybe I should get on my bike and head home before 5. And that's how I use it. And it's worked very well. I haven't really gotten wet since I started using it. You couldn't use this everywhere. I mean, it really depends on how the weather pushes through. In the case of Tokyo, you have fronts which really come from the southwest and move up across Japan. Sometimes you have fronts which come across the Sea of Japan. But in either case, you can really see them moving across. So you have plenty of time in order, to react in some way. The only case which is kind of difficult to see because you don't have as much coverage is when they come from the south, which only happens during the summer and typhoon season, but very rarely. Only once, I think, has a storm formed over Tokyo, which is really, if it forms over you, it's kind of difficult to see. But they always push through. So I guess I'm a bit lucky that I can use this and it works for me. So let's look at it instead a bit of the Earth that we were just looking at earlier. So this is 24 hours worth of satellite imagery of the northern and southern hemisphere. The front which you see in the north is the one which we were just watching the rain push through. So it's really sweeping up to Hokkaido, to the northern island. The southern hemisphere imagery is actually the same that you see in the Australian Bureau of Meteorology as well. So if we wanted to get a bigger picture of where things are going, we could use this. And I chose this series of images. This is actually the front as it's pushed further up north. And it's really, really gained a lot of speed. But I think it's kind of beautiful how you have the, how you can see the fronts when they move through, and this one particularly, how it's really just turned into this massive thing. You can, if this, for example, if the front were coming from the west, you could probably see it way out, or at least you could know that you, to watch for it if it were coming at you or not. Sorry about that. So where does this data come from? Which is really important to us. It really comes from meteorological observatories, radar and satellite. So these are locations of radar, Doppler radar sites across Japan. They do scans and then the data is updated every 10 minutes. And the other source of data is satellite data. Japan has two satellites orbiting at all times, gathering images which you saw earlier,
NTSAT 1R and NTSAT 2. One is certainly the backup and one is actively always scanning. Go ahead. Oh, thanks. I'm here.
So let's take a look at what. These are the locations of radar stations in Australia. And in terms of satellite data, Australia gets its data from three sources. One is the Japanese satellites, MTSAT 1, R, and 2, which in Japanese are called their Sunflower 6 and 7. And also from NOAA, which are U.S. satellites, 16 and 7, 17, and from a Chinese satellite, FY27. So if we go back to Japan, how does this data get to us on Tinky.jp? This is all paid for by tax money. It's done by the Japan Meteorological Agency. And the JMA was actually formed in 1875 when an Englishman was in Tokyo working and wanted to gather seismic data, and they imported a device from Italy to do so. And that's when it was founded. It wasn't a national organization then. It was just a part of Tokyo, part of a ward office in Tokyo at the time. And it grew up into now being part of the Ministry of Infrastructure. So in 1994, the Japan Meteorological Business Support Center was formed, and they basically handle all digital data. So you'd think you could go to the JMA and get your data, which they provide for free, paper data, or if you want to make copies or whatever, no problem. But if you want digital data, you have to go to the Business Support Center, which is not part of the government, it's actually a foundation. So they have different goals. And they actually sell to the Japan Weather Association, which is who is just working with the image data, and Weather News, which is another company in Japan, which does a lot with weather. And the JWA, the Japan Weather Association, then takes those images and puts them out to Tinky.jp or Yahoo.co.jp, for example. So say I wanted to take this device and put it in a coffee shop or somewhere public so people could actually use it, you know, maybe in a gallery for fun. That goes beyond personal use of the data. So say I wanted to buy the data, how much would that cost? Because it's not available freely for use. I'd have to put in a line, a dedicated line from NTT called ArcStar IFAX, and it costs about 55 Australian dollars to start up, about $32 per month, 25 cents per map. So say I wanted to get two map types, and I wanted 6 per hour, 24 hours, 32 days. That works out to about $92 Australian for the month. Throughout the year, or say I wanted more than just two types, I wanted 6 or 12, it's fairly expensive, so it's not really feasible to work. So really that brings us, you know, what is free data? Well, we want to be able to redistribute. This is data which is gathered by the government, which I think should be available for, I mean, it is available for personal use, but available for redistribution and modification. And one of the reasons why you would want to do that, I think, is for art. You know, if you want to put it in a coffee shop, if you want to use it freely, or if you want to put it in a gallery, you want to work with this data and share it with other people, not for profit, but just work with it. I think it should really be available. And that's one of the things I hope to do in going back to Tokyo, is work a bit on lobbying to get it more available, to get APIs available for people to work with so that people can actually find it easier to download this data. Another reason is to prevent catastrophe. So say you have, when there's an earthquake and you feel a, you know, slight sway, you kind of wonder, where did this happen? How far was it from you? Is someone you know affected? Should you go back? Should you call them? Should you send them something? So you go to tinky.jp, which is really the main source for that data, and it takes about an hour before you can actually connect and see what happened and see where the earthquake that happened and what the seismic action was, which normally you'd have no problems with. So if you look at a place like Tokyo, I mean, you can get fiber optics in your house for 100 megabits for $30. You'd think that it would be, if you could work with the government a bit, you could provide a way where this information is distributed into the home, and you can distribute it between different houses. So if, say, half the network goes down in Tokyo, you may not go to tinky.jp to get it, but at least it's there, and you have a higher chance of getting it. So, what's next? What to do? I really wanted to make an interface for this. Right now, it's just a display, but something, say, playing with a couple dials so you can flip through the data yourself with the different types. I thought it might be fun to maybe put something in your shoes, so as you're jogging, maybe LED flashes, and the closer the rain gets, the faster it flashes. But I think that's what's fun about when you have data, you have this data which is affecting your life directly. You want to use it for something. You want to use it in art. And that's, you want to do something fun with it. So I have some friends who are working with interactive media and more tactile media in Tokyo. And I'd just like to show you some of the stuff that they do, for an example of some interactive media art. So they use RFID tags, and you just place it on a table. And the R is for red, and basically by placing it on the table, something happens. And there's lots of these blocks. There's green, there's sounds, actions. And so if you place red down, the wall's going to change. And so you have an interactive environment to work with. You place green down, okay? Something's going to happen. You place a sound down. You place something else down. You have this environment which you can modify and work with. They did another project using for RFID DJs, if you want to be a visual DJ. And it's actually quite fun for kids to come in and see what will happen in videos of themselves when they can take, oh, let's maybe put a bit of bounce into the, or, so we could take maybe, rather than working with the data which is in front of us, we could work with weather data or whatever kind of data, and include it into installations like this. So if you ever visit Tokyo, there's a museum called the NTT Intercommunication Center. It's in Shinjuku, but they have lots of works like these. It's free. I highly recommend it if you ever go. Is there any questions? Well, thank you very much for coming. Oh, there's one back there. Sorry. The React table, Professor Ishii is at MIT, the Media Lab. Yeah. Oh, it's pretty neat. The MIT Media Lab is a great source for this sort of stuff. It's kind of more lots of engineering aspect as opposed to the artistic aspect. And you know, that's what the displays you were just seeing, that wasn't done with open source software, that was done with mostly proprietary stuff.